Technology today has never been smarter. But smart only matters when you put it to good use. Together we can build a smarter future for all of us. Let's put smart to work. Find out how at ibm.com/smart.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we do our interviews. And joining us now, he writes and covers Bay Area sports for The Athletic. Also, you can check out his 2 books, not one, but 2. Golden, which is a book on Steph Curry. And I just bought this one on my Kindle myself. KD, Kevin Durant's Pursuit to Be the Greatest. His name is Marcus Thompson. And Marcus, let the people know where you went to college.
Clark Atlanta University, baby. We will find a way or make one.
That's right. That is what we do. So, you covered the Warriors. How are things?
Things are surprisingly excitable, even though they're like half dead. Still got a little bit of a pulse. The Bay kind of lit right now. It's almost like a, you know, it's that one last party before they shut the club down. This is what's going on. Yesterday I was like, man, it's kind of hype in the Bay. Look at this. Everybody, all the stores is kind of packed. The barbershop is crowded. I'm like, all right, let's go, Bay Area. I'll see you.
Yeah, it's like one last party before they shut the club down, except at about 12:30, somebody shot that thing up, and the headliner was carried out on a gurney. Well, not a gurney, just a stretcher. Gurney, I feel like, is the dead one. Just a stretcher.
Well, we'll see if somebody going to pick up the mic and rock that thing still, or if they're going to actually let it be shut down.
Hey, man.
It's time for Steph Curry to grab the mic.
But this is the most, I can't think of a situation quite like this one with the Kevin Durant injury, because you tell me if I'm wrong here, but literally everyone involved, their reputation is on the line here.
No question. I mean, have we even seen that before? Like a player step into the finals, like of Kevin Durant's stature, just to walk in game 5, like that was crazy alone. But then to leave like 12 minutes later, it is nuts. And it's really created like this weird kind of backdrop for people to either be heroes or goats, right? It's going to be crazy. Like if Steph Curry pulls this off, it changes the narrative about him. You know, it changes everything. If Klay Thompson does this, if Draymond Green wins this, can you imagine shutting that dude up? If you take away the 3-1 lead blowing they did in 2016, if you can just kind of like, if they get a makeup grade for that, if they go back to summer school and fix that class, can you imagine them dudes after that? Man, like it's a whole lot on the line. It's crazy too because like they've put so much into this that sometimes you felt like they might be okay with it ending this way, right? Not like we want to lose, but the realization that, man, all this stuff ends at some point, right? And you, I remember Miami kind of had that feel where like, all right, man, well, this is how it is, huh? Like, you kind of look at each other and be like, all right, this is how it is, good run. But the Kevin Durant injury has kind of given them new life in that way, where they're like, nah, this don't really have to end yet.
Yeah, but like, with the injury itself, though, and just what has surrounded the team around the injury, and we got these reports that there were whispers about guys wondering why it was that other guys were playing through these injuries and Kevin Durant was not back. Were his teammates among those who were looking at him like, why aren't you playing?
I think they were. I think they were looking at him like, what's going on? Part of it was, I mean, like, it starts with just poor communication. Like, there were people who just didn't know what was happening. And some of that is, I think the Warriors are trying to be a little coy about it. Like, maybe for the Raptors team, they probably should have, in hindsight, said, man, that dude is out. He ain't coming back. And then let him pull a surprise comeback. But I just felt like every step of the way, I remember in Houston, they won. They were like, yeah, we're going to win this thing for KD, right? We're going to keep going for KD. Get to Portland, you know, they went in, let's sweep this thing, give KD more time, right? Like, there was a kind of a vibe, like, let's do this for KD. And then they just didn't know. Like, so when is he coming back? Like, it just came to be like that. And you know, there's a lot of camps and stuff. There's a lot of people talking about it. A lot of wondering. You just didn't know. People just didn't know fully what was going on. I think that's what it was. It's just like people just. It would have been better if the certainty was there, but the uncertainty made it feel like, well, so what's happening, and are we ever going to get him back, or do we need to keep going without this? Because remember, they were down 3-1, and it was looking bleak, and it was like, so are we getting this? You know, this big boost or not. So you can kind of feel that sense after the game, after game four. But I think it was more a communication than anything. I really believe that. They just didn't know for sure what was happening.
But once this happens, right, and once people have a better idea of what's going on, I mean, and of course we just saw him just hit the ground. What was your take in from the vibe from players and even management after the game?
Yo, it was crazy, man. They were, like, really sad. I mean, the crazy part is we've seen these injuries, right? I watched Steph Curry crying on the court when he blew out his knee in Houston. Like, DeMarcus Cousins just blew out his quad, right? Looney had a broken bone in his chest. And it was always like, oh, man, that's messed up. Like, we got to keep going somehow. With KD, it was, like, legit sadness. Like, people were really shaken by it. And probably because he did so much to get back, probably because they know what's at stake for him, you know, because that dude is like, he's just been under the gun all year long. It was a lot of factors, like, just to watch Steph kind of choke up. I didn't even see Bob Myers live, right? But when I saw the video, I was like, man, that was like a full-on ugly cry right there. But that was just surreal after the game. It was surreal that they were that sad about it. And I just hadn't seen that before in those circumstances. It was almost like something like, I mean, I know it's a really bad injury, but it felt like it was somewhere. It felt like a Paul George type injury vibe. But even that, they were probably more scared than they were sad. They just felt really bad for KD, I think.
I mean, so do they like him now?
You know what? To be honest, I actually think they've always liked him. I think they've all, I mean, you don't do that for people you don't like, right? Like, they're not feeling that way for people they don't like. I think the thing with KD has always been they just want him, right? They want him to be all in. I think that's, like, even to go back to November Draymond thing, it's not like, hey, man, we don't want you here. The question was, you know, how come you don't love us enough to commit for 5 years, right? Like, that's really what it boils down to. I do think they've always liked him. Him and Steph, they get together, and they've always been like high school boys, right? Always laughing about something. Always got some inside jokes. Like, they're likable. They like him. I think there's maybe the uncertainty of what he's going to do. Like, maybe some people took that as a slight. I just never heard them say they don't like him. They always liked him. I think the problem is they just wanted him to be in, like, fully in. And I think Kevin Durant was always like, look, man, you watch my work ethic. I'm going to show you how I'm in, but I'm a free agent for a reason, right? I earned this top dog status to be able to pick my spot, so I'm going to use it. I don't think they ever not liked him, though.
Yeah, because I think the thing that has gotten me about this is I wouldn't dare question whether or not that dude could play or whether he could play, right? Like, if he's not playing, the only assumption would be that he could not play. I haven't seen anything to indicate that he was the dude that you would have those questions about, but it seemed pretty clear that questions abounded.
It never made sense, the whole idea that, like, he would possibly be able to play but wouldn't. Like, if you know anything about KD, I mean, that dude is a hooper, right? Like, he plays hoop. Like, he's like Clay in that sense. You don't. Like, that's his sanctity. He's not missing basketball games. He's not missing finals games, for real. I don't think it was a, why is this dude not playing? He can play. I think it was a, so are we getting him back or not? And I think some of it was the frustration of being down 3-1, of not really having no answers, of having to play dudes on the end of the bench who otherwise not being able to play, and just not really knowing if he's coming back or not. Like there are reports he's coming back game 3, coming back game 4, he's coming back game 5. I think they were basically expecting the cavalry to come and wondering when it was coming. So If I mean, like, if you ask him to a man, like, did you think Kevin Durant could play and was not? All of them would say no. I think a lot of it had to do with, so is it one more game or is it not? Like, just do what is going on? That was part of the desperation they were in. Like, the Raptors had them 3-1, spanked their butts in Oracle, and Kevin Durant was the last hope. So they were just walking around in the wilderness waiting on the sign, waiting on manna from heaven. And it was like, yo, where this man at? We hungry.
So how are you enjoying this game of hot potato with, I think, Bob Myers is in the game of hot potato, Steve Kerr is in the game of hot potato, and they just trying to get that blame off on somebody else's hands.
Oh, man, I thought it landed in the media's hands. I thought we was the ones stuck with it, my bad.
Hold on, they wasn't saying media. Funny. They was saying you. They was putting you and Tim, specifically you and Kawakami. They'll put it on the rest of the media partner. They talk about the Athletic.
Yeah, they definitely talking about us. I think Sam Amick got a little bit. I think the rest of them got a little. I think some other people got a little bit. Look, first off, I ain't wrote nothing, so they can say what they want to say. But I stayed away from all that stuff because I just don't like when you don't know, you just got to be quiet. But it is an interesting game of hot potato. It is interesting watching them kind of pass it off. Like, you can say what you want about the media, about what we wrote, whatever. At the end, somebody had to tell that dude he could play. Right? And it turned out to be wrong. Now, I do believe that Kevin Durant just wanted to play. I do believe that. I do believe. And plus, that dude is a grown man. He's been kind of running his ship for a long time now. You know, like, on some, like, there's no, like, advisors kind of making the way for him. Like, he's been his own man for a while. So I find it hard to believe that somebody could force KD to play or make him play against his will or whatever. I think that dude wanted to get out there and play. He wanted to be there for his teammates, and it didn't work out. Now, should somebody have told him not? Nah. I mean, that's, you know, Bo, you way smarter than us, so I'll let you determine that. But this idea that an article somebody wrote forced the dude to go out there and risk his Achilles is crazy. It also paints him as far weaker than people think he is. He is not that weak. I know he engages in social media and he likes the back and forth. I just don't believe that dude is out here making decisions based on tweets. Like, it's just not, I mean, the dude is just not who he is, not how he's made like it. He's just not, dude. I just don't buy it. I don't buy it at Kevin Durant. It's like, oh, I'm going to show them. Let me go out there and I know I might get an Achilles just so I can show them because they're talking. I mean, I know he likes to engage, but I just don't think that's him. I think he chose to play because he's a grown man who loves playing. It's finals. It was killing him the whole time, I'm sure, and he decided to play. So if they want to blame me for that, they go ahead.
See, I think he wanted to play because basketball players want to play. The thing that gets me out here like, huh, is the Warriors making this argument that they were told that this injury could not get worse. Chris Carter was on Fox a couple of days ago and was like, look, he's not going to play again. I mean, he said this when it happened. Like, he's not going to play again because he's going to come out there and pop his Achilles. From the description of what the injury was, it absolutely could have gotten worse. Like just, you know, like, I'm not a doctor necessarily, but what they said he had was something that definitely sounded like it was a thing that could wind up getting worse. So when they say that and everybody sounds a little shaky and Steve Kerr sounds real defensive about it, that's the one where I'm like, hey, I don't know what you guys are over here talking about.
I know, right? Like, first off, is that ever even true? Right? This whole it can't get worse thing, I don't know. Maybe they could argue that's a completely separate injury, but they'd only be talking to fools because it's the same area, it's the same affected connection between that calf and the Achilles. So I don't know if they can skate away from this one. And keep in mind, they're telling Kevon Looney right now, he can keep playing because he can't make his worse.
I was wondering what he was thinking about that. Word? That's what this is?
Like, hold on. Now, what was that y'all saying again? Like, I just feel like that's a risky thing to say automatically, but I mean, look, so were they saying what Kevin Durant needed to hear to play, or was this Kevin Durant pressing them to play and they saying, look, I don't think you can make it work? Like, we don't know that part. It's definitely suspect, though. It definitely doesn't look good for the head athletic trainer that he was told that. But, again, I'm just going to lean on player agency. I mean, look, if we're going to say this dude is weak and can be swayed like that, I don't buy it, but that's what we're saying. I think that's a grown man that walked out on that court. Now, look, the Warriors had to deal with that part. Like, that, they, in essence, lost. If that dude resigns, they lost the, $40 million talent for a year, right? Like, that's a decision they got to live with. They got to deal with that. That's definitely something. And the fact that Bob Myers is crying up there lets you know that hit them, but that was blindsided. They didn't expect that at all, but maybe
or,
they should
or,
have, right? Maybe,
or, that, or that tells you he was guilty.
Guilty? Yeah, could be guilty. I mean, he definitely felt guilty. No yeah. question. He felt like he just ruined that dude. He just hurt him. I do feel like they didn't think that would happen, and they feel responsible for it. And if you know, Myers is really kind of like human. He likes that, right? He likes to feel things. So there's no question there's guilt in that organization. They feel it. They feel like they put Kevin Durant in danger, and he hurt himself. I'm just not buying the whole Kevin Durant was like, let me go at them because they're talking about me. I just don't buy that. I mean, I've talked to the dude, and he's going at people, and he's arguing with people online. And then you talk to him, he's like, oh, yeah, that was fun. Like, oh, no, I'm just talking. It's not like, you know, this governs his life. I just ain't buying that.
Yeah, now, you literally wrote the book on Kevin Durant. So when you say he's his own man and he makes his own decisions, I'm inclined to believe you. However, what about the bald head dude?
Yeah, I mean, that's his decision, is to have Kleiman as his right-hand guy, right? I think Kleiman is involved in that. No question about it. Kleiman is involved in it. But let me ask you this. Do you think Kleiman wanted him to play or didn't want him to play?
I'm not sure. My question with Kleiman, because honestly, I think if I'm Kleiman, I don't want him to play, right? If I'm Kleiman, I'm like, forget these guys. We going to New York anyway. Oh, did I say that out loud? Yeah. But if I'm Kleiman, I'm like, yeah, forget about these guys. We going to New York anyway. Where I was curious about it with Kleiman, though, is all the other things that you hear about Kleiman is able to push Kevin Durant into or out of doing. And this wasn't the one.
I think that's a sign of their relationship. Like, Kleiman is a very strong influence for Kevin Durant. But, like, he's told me personally, like, no, that's my man, right? Like, that's my guy, right? I don't know if it's like, I'm just going to listen to what you say because I believe you smart. I think they're back and forth with it. I think they talk about this stuff. I think he's gotten so close to Kevin, he kind of knows how you feel, and he's kind of reading and reacting off that. That this is, you know, I'm not in their circle, so I don't know. No, I'm just going off the feel that I've been able to gather. Like, you think Rich Kleiman doesn't want him off social media? You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, yo. Right, like, I mean, Kevin Durant has shown in many occasions that, like, he's going to do what he's going to do. So, now, does Rich have some sway? Absolutely. Like, that's literally his friend and business partner. Like, they're tight. But if I had to guess, Kleiman didn't want him to play. Kleiman's like, nah, we got a bunch of money sitting waiting for us in like a month. Just chill. Like, it sucks, but suck it up. And waited out, and somehow he managed to be on the court anyway. So I'm sad that Kevin Durant's a grown man. That dude, I mean, like, he went to Virginia to play basketball at Oak Hill Academy when he was like 15, 16, like on his own. Like, anybody even drive him down there, I don't think. Like, that dude's been doing this for a long time now.
Gabe, you ready to play that music that people don't like when I'm keeping them out of something? We're keeping a secret from them.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I got
you. No, just, you know, he's giving the people a little back and forth on this. Marcus, listen to what somebody told me.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Y'all, I was like, damn, that. That's harsh. Now tell me this. How likely do you think it is that Kevin Durant resigns with the Warriors?
I feel like that's a tough one to call. The question becomes, who comes to play with him? Right? Like, who's going to join him and say, yeah, I know you are the year, but let's do this. And if that's not the case, does that impact where he goes if nobody goes with him? So it's tough, man, because even though I feel like they kind of messed him up, they might be the best option for him, right? Like, just, hey, man, are y'all going to pay me the max? Y'all go get me back to health, right? And I know I got dudes who want to play with me. Like he's a lionized figure now. He is a legend in the Bay now. Like, whatever, if he didn't get enough credit before, he gets it all now. So maybe this helps from that end. I'm not totally sure.
Zach, I feel like for him, it's an interesting situation where him re-signing with the Warriors would be like if LeBron re-signed with Miami in 2014, where you had this great run. But this run is not going to be any better than it was before. It's already been as good as it was going to be. There is a decline here, but they're also in a situation where it looks like they're going to re-up on all the guys that made the run possible in the first place, which is always a bad idea to do in that way. Because, hey, you look up, and how do you fill out this bench? That being said, nobody wants to be Jerry Krause, right? Nobody wants to be the guy that does it a year too early versus a year too late. But I don't see how the Warriors can keep this thing going with the four guys they're going to have to pay a boatload of money to.
I mean, look, the best hope is, like, to keep the party going, right? And you do a Spurs thing where over a 10-year span, you walk away with, you know, five championships, right? Like, that's the ideal the Warriors are gunning for. Like, not to just be at to win championships every year, but to be a contender for 20 years. So if that's the vision, you know, then it becomes a matter of, you know, in a few years, let that cap keep going up and give you some more flexibility, right? And how long can they go? If you're the Warriors and you spent 40 years just trying to make the playoffs, I think now they're thinking like, man, let's just make sure this doesn't go away, right? This whole playoffs every year, playing deep, let's make sure this doesn't go away. So I do feel like there's some value in bringing everybody back, because even if KD doesn't leave, you still got Steph, Clay, and Draymond, right? And at some point, they might not win a championship every year, but those dudes are good enough to be a contender, to be in the playoffs. You know, they'll be definitely back in the pack in the top of the league, but they'll be in it every year. And that's not nothing out here. I mean, I know if you haven't been out here, people think this is all sweet. It wasn't always like this. You know, there's a lot of misery and waiting for this, right? So I just think people are like, man, let's just keep this going, even if you don't win every year. That's why I don't think nobody would be too mad if the Warriors lost. It's like, just do what can be done to keep them in the hunt every year, as opposed to just barely trying to make the playoffs.
All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk more with Marcus Thompson. But first, want to save money by consolidating your credit card debt and lowering your interest rates? Refinance with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. It's an easy way to save hundreds to thousands of dollars and lower your interest rate. LightStream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.95% APR with AutoPay, lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. Whew, that's a lot. There are absolutely no fees, and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Bomani for more information. You know, that reminds us that the Warriors are moving into a new building. Are you telling me that Joe Lacob doesn't want it to be like it is when they were bad in Oakland, which is to say Joe Lacob don't want people firing up in the upper deck of his new building because the team ain't worth watching?
Yeah, nah, that would be a nightmare, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be a disaster, especially with the prices. I've never seen an arena, a team build a new arena, and it's smaller than the one they were in. Like, we've never seen that before, right? Like, that's nuts. I mean, you just know the ticket prices are going up just on the sheer demand, supply and demand element. But they're already making money off this thing. Like, it's insane. They're getting people to give them a loan like a interest-free loan. It's people are nuts about it over here. It's going to be a different crowd. Like, you know, that's why tonight is going to be a little bit bittersweet for, you know, us real town folks. You know, I'm saying part of our childhood and our part of our Oakland is straight about to end tonight. But it's at least for the first couple of years going to be pretty wild in San Francisco. It's already crazy. It's going to be like, it's like luxury everything. Everything is super fancy, super high class, super high tech. Like they're really pinkies out in that new place.
Now, for people who don't understand, can you explain the city and the town to them? You being a native.
So the city is, you know, San Francisco, right? Skyscrapers, you know, money, not so much diversity, right? But the town, like that's Oakland, right? That's like the little brother in a sense. Like, didn't have much, a little much more community, more diverse, not as much money. We got a different spirit. Like it's kind of a civil war that if you're not from here, it's tough to understand. I know many people are like, man, they just moved 15 minutes. Why y'all tripping? But that 15 minutes is like a world away. So we've kind of had this brewing, you know, for all our lives, right? So it's a great divide between the city and the town. It's a lot more social economic than just that bridge might suggest.
But also, is the town still the town?
Man, in some parts it's still hella town. Some parts it's looking like a little San Francisco, right? You know, yeah, gentrification is real. It's crazy too, because where I live, Bo, matter of fact, a few blocks from where I live is like where my cousin got killed, like in a bad drug deal, and now they're like, now you just might see people walking babies and dogs. You know what I'm saying? It's like four coffee shops over here. It's crazy. I couldn't come over where I live. I couldn't come over here as a kid. Like, it was forbidden. You didn't come over here unless it was daylight. You was with an adult, right? And now we walk through manicured streets. So no question, a little bit of that tech money has dribbled. Not a little bit. A lot of that tech money has dribbled over here. But it's still some parts, Bo. It's still. You get to East Oakland, you're like, oh yeah, oh yeah. They ain't get it all yet.
You sound like me talking about Harlem. Like people talk about, man, Harlem is all gone. I'm like, yeah, maybe off of Broadway. Over there off Broadway, I kind of see what you talk about. You come over to Frederick Douglass, I feel what you mean. You get to Lenox, it's a little less of that. You get to Lexington, and I don't know what you're talking about. I had to go get my driver's license at 125th in Lexington. I got off the train, and I was like, whoa, whoa, ho, ho, ho. Somebody please move some white people in here so I feel a little more safe.
That's how East Oakland is. That's still East Oakland. It's bleeding that way, though. You can see it. We can see it over the years. You can see the new restaurants start popping up with the organic stuff and the kale. like the places where you get that are starting to expand into East Oakland. So give us some time, Bo. Oakland will be all Brooklyn.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting that I think the best way to put this, right? So I have always found that Oakland sports teams, all of them, were remarkably countercultural at every turn, right? You talk about the 70s and 80s and 90s A's. Those were like countercultural sorts of teams. The Raiders, of course, were like a counterculture sort of squad. And the Warriors, right? We think about the Warrior squads that we like, even if it's just like playing an unorthodox style of basketball with Don Nelson and then like the We Believe stuff, like all of that felt very Oakland. I've always kind of felt like this particular Warriors team was like the perfect bridge for them to move to San Francisco, because this felt a little bit more San Francisco than the other teams are. Am I incorrect in that?
No, there's definitely something there. I mean, like Steven Jackson and them, man, back when they was playing, like it'd be a cloud of weed at the top of Oracle, right? It was going down. I think Steph, you know, he's so palatable to so many markets that like he draws it all. Like he can please anybody from the 9-year-old, you know, just started playing hoop, to the Silicon Valley billionaire. Like he draws it all, which means like all that money started coming in. Like Draymond is probably he's probably like the most Oakland of them, like the most part of that kind of countercultural, against the grain. Like I got this personality that rubs people the wrong way, but in Oakland y'all gonna like it, right? He's got a lot of that. And Steph and Clay are like on paper really San Francisco, right? Like they're elite, they're top level, you know, they come from well-to-do families. But man, Steph has been like the most riding with Oakland his whole 9 years, especially these last 2 years. Like, this is touching him. Like, this is like moving him. I remember at the last game, game five, I was like, so, you know, last game in Oakland, he's like, oh man, what's the most Oakland thing I could wear? I was like, man, white t-shirt, blue jeans, and ice.
That's how we used to do it.
So, with some socks, right?
Yes.
You're right. This team is the transition from like the rags to riches is complete, right? This team is we used to be the underdogs. We used to be broke. We used to love for a chance to beat the top notch teams to now full on top notch. And the only question now is, do they lose that kind of grimy underdog grassroots Oakland element that they had, and that kind of made them a little different than most teams? But it's already being lost a little bit, so you can imagine what's going to happen when they're full scale into this fancy state-of-the-art arena.
I'm going to tell the people something you told me once that I think will sum up for folks just how much things have changed in the 10 years that Steph Curry got there. Steph Curry got there, and Monte Ellis wasn't sure this was going to work.
And told him and said that, like, day one of media day. Like, didn't even like wait a couple practices out. Was just like, yeah, this ain't gonna work. We can't win together. I remember we were all like, dang, dude, he just walked in. I remember having to ask Steph that. Like, so since Monte says that, we go to Steph. Like, yo, so Monte just said he can't win with you. And he's like, you could tell he's like a little shocked, like, what? But, you know, he put on his good face and his answer, like, you know, oh, you know, I just need to prove myself. And, you know, that's how it's supposed to be. Rookie's supposed to come in and earn their way to leave. But it was just like, dang, dude, day one. Like, it might have been first question. It was back, man. I think that was the same year. Was that the same year that Steven Jackson showed us his new tattoo, and it was like praying hands wrapped around a gun? Like, on the like, that training camp was wild, man. It was like two trade requests, a new gun tattoo, and Monte saying he can't play with Steph. It was wild times.
And the thing was, at that time, to be fair to Monte, It was a fair question to ask.
Absolutely. He was right. Remember, they just had Baron Davis, who was a bigger point guard, and Jason Richardson as the backcourt. They just, we believe, had just won with that, right? Or, you know, made it to the playoffs, beat Dallas in the first round, lost in the second round. But they kind of had the foundational pieces where it was like, all right, this is more traditional. And it was kind of like a little bit of what they ended up going with. Bigger on the perimeter allows you to be smaller on the interior. So Monte was like, man, you mean we went from Baron and Jason Richardson to me and Steph? Like, you can't play small like that. So, I mean, he wasn't wrong. And the only thing he was wrong about was he was thinking
he would stay.
Steph is the one who had to go. Yeah. Like, man, I don't know why y'all gave me this dude. Y'all need to give me like a real two guard.
Yo, that's the thing. Is that he was like, yo, we can't win together. They're like, you know what? You're right.
You're right. Eventually, it was like, hey, man, Monte, you had a point. Yeah, way to be on top of it, man. That's good basketball IQ. So you shoot to Milwaukee.
Monte now goes over kind of like Ricky Davis, in that when the Cavs drafted LeBron, Ricky Davis is like, cool, they got me some help. Monte was like, yo, I need help, and you give me this?
Yeah, and they just told him he was going to be the point guard, too. That's the thing. They flew out. They told him, we're not going to draft the point guard. You are a guy who put the ball in your hands. And him and Nelly had a tenuous relationship. Him and the franchise did after he got suspended from the bullpen. He just wasn't from the franchise at all. So they had done the whole patch-up thing. Let's get Monte aboard. Let's get on the same page. And then Steph Curry falls to him in the draft. And they're like, yeah, never mind. We know we can, but we didn't know Steph was going to be here. So, yeah, plans changed. Which is hilarious when you think about it, right? Like, and where's Monte now? I think Monte is actually better than what we remember him for, but man, it's cold-blooded that's going to be his place in history now.
I wonder what he and Steph talked about.
They actually got cool. They actually ended up being real cool after that. I think Steph did win him over. I remember his wife saying, like, telling me, like, man, like, no, Monte likes Steph. Monte's a fan, because Steph was one of those dudes, man. He just, maybe it's because his dad was in the pros. He just, like, I'm gonna earn my keep, right? And if these vets don't like me, I'm gonna make them like me. He didn't Dez Bryant them, right? He was just like, yeah, this is my rite of passage, so to speak. So he spent like the first few months just trying to prove to Monte he was worthy, and ended up working. Monte was like, man, I like this dude. Like, he don't give up. He don't quit. And they ended up real cool. I remember Steph got invited to Monte's wedding, and he felt like, okay, I did it. Like, I pulled it off. Like, you know, Monte accepts me. He looked up to Monte. Ain't that crazy? Like, he really looked up to Monte. It's odd how that works out.
Oh, no, this is also kind of like Steven Jackson and Tim Duncan hangout, though I got a pretty good idea what they got in common.
Let me see. What is it? Is it guns and tattoos?
No, neither of those. Neither of those. Though it would be really funny if we found out that after all those years in San Antonio, like somebody goes and does a feature on Tim Duncan, and then he takes you into like his special room and he opens his cabinet and it's just full of guns.
Boy, that would be the shock of the century, right?
Right, right. Like imagine that. Tim Duncan pulls a double barrel shotgun off the wall to show it to you. Like, oh no, I'm not going to shoot you. Just look at the workmanship.
Man, if Tim Duncan lifts up his shirt and he's got the Thug Life tattoo on his stomach, like, I'd be like, what? Who missed this? Where's Mike Monroe from the San Antonio Express News? How do we not know this?
It could be, Marcus.
That would be unique.
It could be. It really, really, really could be. But
come on, that's Tim Duncan.
But y'all gonna be a little sad when the team leaves Oakland. Like, it's a bummer to me, and I don't even live in Oakland. Like, this is like, and by the way, they still got the thing at the new arena where they can pull up your boat.
Yeah, it's the ferry. That's how you get there.
Oh, I thought they had it set up where you could pull up your boat, like your own boat.
For what? So the ball can land in the water?
I'm saying, I thought that some of these ballers are going to be floating, bringing their boats in and then going to the game and then getting on the boat and then come off. Like, I thought it was going to be like valet boat parking up in that bag.
Bro, it's San Francisco. All that's possible. It's so much money over there. They can do whatever they want to do. I mean, they have a nice little walk, but they can do it. Man, it's, look, let me tell you, this place over there, the luxury suites, are like, it's like a Manhattan penthouse. It's crazy. They got doors on them, like wooden, thick, like mansion doors to get in. It's like you're walking into, man, it's crazy. They got couches and kitchens and them things. I was just like, what is this? It's like an apartment. And it's the suite. They got some of those suites where you don't have any view to the court. There's just TVs that's showing you, that's simulating, you know, that's live what's going on.
Hold on. They got suites that can't see the floor.
That can't see the floor, Bo. Like, you can't see the floor. They got this, I mean, you got seats on outside. You can go sit in your seats. But if you're in the suite, you're just watching it on TV. You're just watching the video of what's happening live outside of your suite.
That's
so you
weird.
Can't even see this floor. And there's a door. What you think is going down in them suites? There's no vision outside or inside, and there's a door. Oh, man, it's going down in them suites.
That's so whack and so dope all at one time. Because at first I said it was whack, and then you repositioned the conversation. I was like, okay, it could also be kind of dope.
Oh, it's going down in the suites. Let me tell you. That's the first thing I was like, wait a second. You can't see in. You can't see out. And there's a door? Oh, man. People who got them suites, people who can pay for suites like that, they don't do it light.
They need that in Miami.
They usually don't have no chill. Oh, can you imagine that in Miami?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's going down in them suites.
Like, let me tell you right now, Mickey Harrison find out about that, he's trying to get a new arena. That's what his customers want.
Can you imagine that suite once they give it to We Believe for a game?
No. Let me tell you something. After you give that suite to We Believe for a game, you got to give that suite, maybe not to We Believe every time, but for people who don't mind, right? Like, that basically becomes the equivalent of, like, the smoking room at a hotel. You can't just decide it's non-smoking one day.
You said what would be left behind will be etched into the essence of the room forever.
Yes, the wall will soak it up. Because, well, ain't nobody going to kick them out. Like, imagine somebody coming up there telling Al Harrington to get out of there. Al Harrington just going to give him a business card.
Absolutely. Like, man, come get some of this good weed.
Yeah, I got more of this at the crib. If you want some. It'll be Al Harrington in there with his grandmama.
Hilarious.
Al in there with his grandmama.
with Viola. Like, let's go.
Every
time, show you the nice life.
Every time I talk to Al, I'm like, how you granny do it? How she?
Remember Al and Steven Jackson had them Kmart shoes?
That's right.
Or they had their own shoes and then sold them to Kmart?
That's right.
And they used to wear them. Steven Jackson used to wear them, and they would bust apart during the game. He would go through like two or three games. Like, man, them dudes been business, dude. Like, unconventional business dudes, too.
Well, let me ask you this. What is you as Oakland native? Like, what is your like biggest memory, not related to this current run, of the Warriors in that building? Because you wrote a great piece about this a few months ago.
Bro, I will never forget being from here and back when we used to sit courtside. It used to be so funny, too, because invariably, if I'm in Oakland at Oracle, it was such a community event that you couldn't go too long without seeing somebody you knew, right? So it would be like all game, somebody be coming up, and they blocking the view of all the other media because they standing right in front. I'm sitting front row, and they coming like, Marcus Thompson, oh, man, I remember. I can't believe you in here. I saw you when he was this, or we went to school together. It was always that all game long. But the funniest part would be times it'd be like dudes from the hood, right? And these are dudes you can't say to, hey, man, move along. We're trying to watch the game, right? And I used to have to tell the media people, like, chill, y'all. Like, relax. But they're like, man, can you tell your friends to move? Like, yo, relax. But they would just stand in front like, yo, you know, you want a drink? I'm about to go get you a drink. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm working. But, you know, you had to have that conversation. It would happen all the time. It was so funny. Like, I'm talking about dudes with tattoo tears walking up like, Marcus Thompson, what's up, man? I always knew you told do something with this writing thing. Right? It just would you be camped up. Hey, mama do it. Hey, daddy do it. Like, those memories used to be incredible because I was equally, like, uncomfortable and, like, and absolutely, like, thrilled, right? It was great to be seen and recognized and having made it, but it was also so uncomfortable, like, just having these dudes walk into my world, right, as this journalist, and I'm trying to be all serious, and here come the hood lined up, like, hey, man, we about to be at this club afterwards. You flying through? You haven't put you on a list? Like, while the game is happening, and the other media are mad. Those moments, I used to live for those. They were so great. That's what I will always remember about Oracle, is just walking through and seeing people you know. And that means, you know, Bo, you should be a lot of stress, man, because I was making like $35,000 when I first started. And now I think it was 45. I think I got a raise, like 45.
But it was still
big money. But, man, it's tough trying to keep, you know, you got to keep up with the fashion. You can't be in there looking all busted. Other media could look all busted, right?
Right.
Most media do look busted. But if I was walking through there, I was like, dang, man, you all right? If I'm busted, they're like, you all right, man? You need to hold something? So you had to – it was a lot of pressure going to games because you had to kind of be, like, dressed. You know, you had to be fly. You got to be represented because you was going to see everybody. You really were going to see all kind of people. I remember I had to tell a dude who had seen my daddy in forever at Oracle that my father died. He's like, oh, man, what's up? Yeah, I'm with the high school with your daddy. How did he do? I had to tell this man at Oracle, oh, yeah, he died a few years ago, right? Like, that's the type of place Oracle used to be. For me, that was it. That's what I'll always remember. It was way bigger than games and moments and all that. It was like all these people in Oakland. And I basically, to be a child of Oakland and to be in Oakland and for people to see you made it, right? And then you get these little 9-year-old kids who come through and they're like, man, you're my favorite writer. And I'm like, really? This doesn't usually happen all in the city you're from. It feels like that's rare to me. Maybe I'm tripping.
Now, there are two levels of fascination to that to me. One, I wish that the people who were shook up could recognize one thing they probably didn't know, which is the dude with the teardrop tattoo is happy that you made it, which is counter to what people think, that people actually get down on. But on the other hand, this is part of being black that does not so much apply in ways that other people can't get. Like, it's enough white people that they can section themselves off into little groups of all sorts, including by class. Nah, man, we all know each other. We it ain't enough of us to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Absolutely, without question. And it's so funny too, man, because like in my hood, people would never let me do anything, right? Like, I remember playing hoop on a corner. Like, we had this corner where all the drugs was happening. There's a hoop court up there, and I felt like I was good enough to play there because I was like real no blood, no foul. And they kicked me out, man. They wouldn't let me play. It's like, man, take your butt to college. Get off this corner, right? So they were, some of them dudes felt like they were really invested. Like it mattered to them that I made it. You know what I'm saying? They were like, yeah, I always knew you was going to do it. Yeah, let me buy you a drink. Like it wasn't just like, oh, look at this dude, he cool. It was like, wow, you actually pulled it off. Like I'm impressed. And I wanted that. Like I liked sitting there hearing that from them. Like that mattered to me that they saw that I made it. But also, like, yo, I kind of need to see that Jason Richardson layup. Stand to the side a little bit. But you can't tell them dudes that, right? The moment you do that, well, that's the thing. Like, you know, we all know everybody. If I acted funny towards them one time, it would have been over. It would have spread all around. Oh, he made it. He's funny now. See, you can't even talk to him, right? That would have been the reputation I would have got.
We'll be back in a minute with more with Marcus Thompson, but first, what if you could combine your credit card balances into one low fixed monthly payment? Refinance with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. It's an easy way to save hundreds to thousands of dollars and lower your interest rate. LightStream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.95% APR with AutoPay. Lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. Whew, that's a lot. There are absolutely no fees and you can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Bomani for more information. Let me switch gears just a little bit here. Jalen Rose did an interview with The New Yorker talking about the use of analytics in basketball. And his main point was they're a tool, but they're not the whole box. It's a wrench, but it's not the whole toolbox. Now, you've been around this league for a while, and you work for one of the more, like, dork-forward sort of – I mean, not work for, but you cover one of the more dork-forward organizations in the NBA. What do you think about Jalen's idea that this push toward more analytics is also going to lead to a push out of, like, generally black executives, but specifically former players?
I mean, this stuff is already, like, network-based, right? Like just – if you just look at who gets hired for – GMs and coaches, like these owners, these people in power, they kind of stick to their circles a lot. Unless you can do something to break into a circle or stand out from the circle, you never really know how people get these jobs, right? And now you start adding like these analytics people kind of with no name, with no basketball resume, right? Like they got, like, I don't know how the Sammy Gelfand was with the Warriors, now he's with the Pistons. I don't know how he got discovered. I know he's one of the top analytics guys do now, but how did they find him? Like, how did he come into knowledge? Like, he wasn't even in basketball. So it really kind of makes it even shorter. Like, how if you can't find the basketball mind that you've never heard of in basketball, how do you find it in math, in analytics, right? Like, it just feels like it shrinks the pool even more. Like, now you're going to know the coaches coming up in the ranks who got the D-League job, have a hard time getting shot, even though they've gone through the quote-unquote process. What's the process for getting on somebody's radar as an analytics guy? Like, that's even more like, yo, I know this dude who knows math. Right? Like I don't know. Like, it's already network-based, and now this area of network is super limited. Right, it's crazy. Like we talking about black men getting in. Like where the women getting the shot in analytics?
Right,
right. Like I mean, like that's a super small subset. That's like, all right, man. Let's just go to MIT and just do our stand out here. We gonna touch somebody. First one we touch, we gonna give a job to. Like if you do that, what's the chances you go get somebody of color in there? So I just feel like this thing is already so network and relationship based, which makes it hard for people of color, for women to get a shot because people aren't hiring people they just don't know, right? They just don't know them. And now you're going to a whole subset of people who ain't even connected to basketball. and somehow like, all right, yeah, let's pick from there. If you're looking at that and you're a person of color trying to get in, that is definitely that's definitely discouraging. Look at you like John Hollinger, who's great at this stuff, right? Look what he had to do to get a shot. Like, I mean, I do have to, he came up with his own stat.
Yeah.
How do you pick these dudes? Where, like, what's the criteria? Where's the application to fill out? I don't know.
We give him too much credit for coming up with that damn stat. No one is not one person has demonstrated to me that PER is useful at all.
It's useful like all stats, right? If you need it to say something for you.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's
there you go.
Yeah, it's an index, but I don't know exactly like what it's reflective of. And he managed to parlay that into a job after, by the way, a career as a writer where he wrote about players so disrespectfully that I can't imagine. Like, anyway, speaking of him, though, that team just did this, though, right? Didn't they hire this 30-year-old dude to run their basketball operations? And then sent Tayshaun Prince out there to introduce the new head coach, who also appears to be like a 30-year-old dude?
Yep. That's how it is. Like, how many analytics people you know? Don't you got like 9 economics degrees?
As I said on television the other day, they invited me to Sloan once to be on a panel about activism.
Activism,
bro.
I mean, you are a bald-headed black man. You got to be able to talk about activism.
No, but I actually did tell him. And it turned out I couldn't go to the conference that year because I had a death in the family like the week of. But I told them, I was like, guys, I'm not doing this. Like, I was really looking forward to getting a chance to, you know, be involved in this. And by the way, y'all need some black people talking about math, right? I was like, I thought I'm down to, you know, I thought we was going to do some things. I was like, no, I ain't doing this. And then they got me onto some other panel and I just couldn't do it. But I definitely had to like shake them up to kind of sort of make that happen. But it's going to be interesting, though, because like as much like we were talking about this on TV and Pablo's talking about STEM education and everything. Guys, let me tell you something, man. There's a lot of black folks out here majoring in engineering. You can go to North Carolina A&T. You can go to Prairie View. You can go to all the Atlanta schools. They are going over to Georgia Tech to take these classes and everything else, right? Like you can go holler at all these people. We out there if you want to find us. We just got to be a matter of us feeling like you actually going to give us some jobs.
Yeah, and who does that? Who's going to find some anonymous dude? Like, it just doesn't happen. Not elite. Like, keep in mind, there's only 30 teams. Right? It's not like this is like this big national. There's all like there's 30 teams, which means there might be 30, 40 analytic jobs. Let's say 60 if you want to hire two each team. Like, that's not an open call thing. That's a who do you know? Like, that's how the NBA works. Let's make a call. It's who do you know? Which is why these retreads always be getting hired again, right? Like, the same pool of candidates always are back in the loop. And when you get one that's out of it, it's probably because of some relationship somewhere. That's how it is. That's the way it goes. So, now, who's walking up to Georgia Tech to find that young brother who is a genius at this and saying, man, I'm going to make something of you? Like, that's not, like, Amin El-Hassan, like, you know, he had to, like, volunteer for the Hawks on some, like crazy stuff, you know, just to get in the building. Like, I know a guy named Chris Gilbert, he took a job in tickets out here and just was doing free work, trying to get on forever, just, like, working on his game, working on his craft. He just wanted to do it, but he's selling tickets on the side because he's just trying to get in the door. Like, there's no door for this. It's all... I'm going to make a call. Who do you know? That's why, Bo, you need to get your team together. You need to get a team of, like, analytics gurus and just be like, hey, be their agent and get them jobs in the league. That's
I ain't gonna
like
lie.
Your calling now that I think about it.
I was actually just sitting here thinking about, you know, maybe I could just quit my job today. I mean, not quit my job, obviously not, but something that would be kind of cool to do. Somebody can get out here and start a program and with some relationships at HBCUs and that Society of Black Engineers, like all this kind of stuff right there. You can go out here, get somebody to put some money down, like some United Negro College Fund type stuff, the Thurgood Marshall Scholarship Fund. You put that in. And what you do is you then call up the NBA and be like, hey, man, we're going to set up this scholarship program. And what you need to do is to get these cats in and give them internships with NBA teams as part of the scholarship program. And then you know what'll happen? All of a sudden, analytics won't matter nearly as much in decision-making. No, we got all these black dudes out here that know how to do the math. Yeah. We off that, though. Like when we show up and stuff like that, they treat it like how it is when you show up to school and the white boys are wearing your shoes. Like, damn, I guess they're not cool no more.
You know, you got these done. These DJs done.
Yep. Moving on. Like when your pops wears them. Like, up, something else. Got to do something else.
Oh, man, we're on nutritionists now. Let's see. We're looking for the top nutrition people.
I mean, that's the danger of the game, man. We show up, all of a sudden things change. This used to be a nice neighborhood. Then we showed up. Y'all, it ain't nice enough no more for you now, is it?
Man, that's way too true. That's disheartening.
It
that's
is.
That's reminding me of the struggle.
But
today's supposed to be a good day, man. It's the last day in Oakland. You're over here depressing me.
But I laugh.
Warriors in Oakland.
But I laugh when I do it, and that is the key. There is laughs to be had in this.
That is hilarious. Think about them setting up a program that some like 8-year-old right now is going to get into and then work their way up and finally make it. And then they lay off all the analytics people.
Yes.
Because Jalen was right.
Right. He gets all the way there. And then somebody looks at him and is like, yo, think fast. They throw a basketball at his hand. And they're like, cool. So make 10 straight free throws. And then you get to the next level of this.
Now, you know, they're going to start hiring all these trainers, train, you know, the guys who work out with these players in the summer and everybody got all these trainers, that's probably going to be next.
Yeah, because look, here's what I'm telling you. But this is real about the analytics and inclusion and stuff like that. Man, if you go to these schools and explain to these cats that are like studying to be engineers that you could actually do this working on basketball, they'll go over there and do that. Because I say this all the time about engineers. I'll do it here. We're adults, right? There's somebody who went to school and got a bachelor's degree in the math and the analytics, the physics, the engineering, whatever. And then they went and maybe got a master's degree. And maybe they went and got a PhD. And they reached the height of their profession. And you know what that person is doing right now? That person's in a laboratory for some corporation every day trying to figure out how to make that tampon even more absorbent. Like that is what all that work and study that he did, that's what that person is doing right now. Somebody over there right now is trying to figure out how to make that Band-Aid stick to your skin but not hurt when you pull it off. That's what he does every day.
How to give me some allergy medicine that don't make me sleepy.
Yes, right. Like that's what these people are doing. I assure you some of them would much rather be working for an NBA team.
Even if it means less money too, right?
Yes. They want something they can tell their friends about at the bar and they think it's cool.
Yeah, that's super cool. We got one of them engineer like in the Chinese media, and she works in Silicon Valley, and she's like literally one of the lab coats and test tubes. And you know where she spent her nights? Doing media at Oracle because it's cool. It's way cooler than that picture of you on the brochure or the pharmaceutical with the lab coat.
Yep.
And you know, squeeze some juice into a tube. Like, it's cool to be around this, no question. They take that in a heartbeat, right?
Indeed, man. But look, that is my man Marcus Thompson. Check out his books, Golden, book on Steph Curry, and KD, a book on Kevin Durant. Works for The Athletic. Check him out over there also. And is an alumnus of
Clark Atlanta University. We will find a way, or we will make one, Bo.
There we go, my man. I appreciate it. You have a good one.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thanks to our guest, Marcus Thompson. Thanks to our sponsor, Lightstream. Be sure to check out the MediaCom show this week. She's starting her division previews with Charles McDonald of SB Nation. Also, subscribe to The Right Time and the MediaCom show. Check us out wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you're a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.